in a world of incompetent bosses, micromanagers, and petty tyrants. One management professor claims that he can help you become the kind of leader that you would want to follow. You are listening to The Leadersmith. Now, here is your host, Darren Gurdis.
Welcome to The Leadersmith. I'm so glad that you could join us. Today, we're going to talk about the five most dangerous words in business. So we're going to start with this phrase, the five most dangerous words, comes from Warren Buffett. It comes from one of his shareholder memos, a memo to his management team. And he's a chairman of Berkshire Hathaway. Berkshire is a holding company. So he's an investor who owns many, many companies. Name brands that you would be very familiar with had we talked about them. Some like Dairy Queen, Duracell, Fruit of the Loom, Geico, Helzberg Diamonds, and then partial stakes in many other companies. Okay, so this phrase comes from a very famous memorandum, September 28, 2006, from Warren Buffett to his managers. And he says this, quote, "The five most dangerous words in business may be," quote, "everyone else is doing it." Okay, so why is that dangerous? Because we use this as a pretext for doing things that we know we shouldn't do, but we justify it on that basis. I talk about this, I use this in my management class all the time in a section on ethics. And when we get to talking about this, I preface this by saying, what could you not sell to others? Like, you know, some people would feel finicky about selling tobacco or guns or alcohol or other, you know, pornography or whatever. What could you not sell to others? And I always have at least one sketchy kind of drug dealer kind of person, somebody who's like, well, everybody else is doing it. And that's almost always, you know, if they don't buy it from me, they're going to buy it from someone else. But you got to understand, you have to stand before God and justify yourself before Him. It's not what everybody else is doing. You want to have a clean conscience for yourself. Okay, let me continue with the memo. So here he is again, quote, "A lot of banks and insurance companies had suffered earnings and disasters after relying on that rationale," unquote. Now, this was in September 28, 2006 when he's writing this memo. So he's not talking about the 2008 financial crisis, but this is almost two full years before the crisis really hit in earnest. Okay, so he's prescient in saying, look, let's not do what everybody else is doing. Okay, let me continue here. "Even worse have been the consequences from using that phrase to justify the morality of proposed actions. More than 100 companies so far have been drawn into the stock option backdating scandal, and the number is sure to go higher. My guess is that a great many of the people involved would not have behaved in the manner that they did, except for the fact that they felt others were doing so as well. The same goes for all those accounting gimmicks to manipulate earnings and to deceive investors that has taken place in recent years." Okay, so again, same thing. This made me think of the other day I was talking with my kids about the golden rule. And I was just saying, as long as you follow the golden rule, you're not likely to harm others. The golden rule is to do unto others as you would have them do unto you. So if you put yourself in that position, and we were talking about some interpersonal dynamics between one sibling and another and how this sibling was bad to that one, I said, well, wait a minute. What if you applied the golden rule? Would this have happened? Same thing works in business. But this is more important to you if you are a leader. So if you're a leader, you're setting the standard for others. People are looking at your cues. They're watching you all the time. You're in a fishbowl. And if you uphold this standard, then people cue off that. And if you say that you uphold this standard, but then you don't actually do this, they follow what you do, not what you say. So you got to be very careful. Okay, back to Buffett. So again, we're quoting, "You would have been very happy to have as an executor of your will or your son-in-law most of the people who engaged in these ill-conceived activities. But somewhere along the line, they picked up the notion, perhaps suggested to them by their auditor or consultant, that a number of well-respected managers were engaging in such practices, and therefore it must be okay to do so." It's a seductive argument. Okay, so what Buffett is saying is these are generally good people who have given themselves a rationale that allowed them to do things that they wouldn't normally have done, and they just kind of got sucked into it. Okay. So good people bought this premise and then became corrupt. It was not intentional, but again, they were violating the golden rule because they gave themselves this rationale. Okay. Continuing with Buffett's words, but it couldn't be more wrong. In fact, every time you hear the phrase, everyone else is doing it, it should raise a huge red flag. Why would somebody offer such a rationale for an act if there were a good reason available? Clearly, the advocate harbors at least a small doubt about the act if he utilizes this verbal crutch. Now, that's a brilliant observation, right? Think about this. You don't excuse yourself for doing what's right. You never hear somebody say, hey, look, if I show up on time, that's my business, okay? Or don't judge me because I use the bathroom. Nobody talks like that because these are normal, proper things to be doing. But when people give the justification or the rationalization, watch out, that's the red flag. Okay, back to Buffett's words. So at Berkshire, let's start with what's legal, but always go on what we would feel comfortable about being printed on the front page of our local paper, and never proceed forward simply on the basis of the fact that other people are doing it. Now, this has been called the Washington Post test, and that's what I call it in class. I've heard it called the front page test, the New York Times test, the Washington Post test, whatever, okay? If you'd be comfortable having what you've just done on the front page of the paper, fine, everything's kosher. But if you would feel uncomfortable with it, just don't do it. Just at that point, just back well away from it. He also talked about this. Start with what's legal, but legality is not the only standard. He didn't say just, you know, as long as you're doing what's legal, everything's okay. He didn't say that. Okay, legal is a minimum bar, and what's moral is a higher standard than what's legal. And so you want to get away, you don't want to go as close as you can to the edge of legality in pursuit of profit. In fact, Buffett's telling you exactly the opposite. And it made me think of the Koch brothers. The Koch brothers get smeared all the time because they're conservative. They get smeared in the popular press. The left hates the Koch brothers. The Koch brothers run the second largest privately held company in the country. And they pour millions into conservative, libertarianish kind of causes. And they wrote great books. By the way, read these books, The Science of Success and Good Profit. Read both of those books. They're awesome. But in Good Profit, Charles Koch wrote, and here I'll quote it, there are tens of thousands of laws and regulations that apply to our businesses, many with the potential to impose criminal liability on the company and its employees. Based on this reality and these incidents in the mid-1990s, we developed our 10,000% compliance model. That's something, 10,000%. Here's how he explains it. which reminds the employees that 100% compliance is required 100% of the time. It's designed to avoid incidents like these from ever occurring by helping employees to remember to stop, think, and ask whenever an issue arises about whether or not they are 100% certain. So they're embracing compliance. They want to be fully compliant, and the idea of 10,000% compliance is pretty powerful. Keeps you away from the edge. You're not trying to get as close as you can to avoiding to crossing the line into what is wrong. You're trying to stay as far away from it as you can. Okay, anyway, I've digressed. Here, a final note. This is Buffett again. A final note. Somebody is doing something today at Berkshire that you and I would be unhappy about if we knew of it. That's inevitable. We now employ well over 200,000 people, and the chances of that number getting through the day without any bad behavior occurring is nil. But we can have a huge effect in minimizing such activities by jumping on anything immediately when there is the slightest odor of impropriety. Your attitude on such matters, expressed by behavior as well as by words, will be the most important factor in how the culture of your business develops. And culture, more than rule books, determines how an organization behaves. Buffett is brilliant here. Now think about this. This is right on so many levels. The leader is raising a flag. He's saying, this is what we will do. Rally to this flag. This is what we do in this culture. Okay? He does not want them to get away with anything, even if they could profit on it. He's not trying to say, hey, you know, if you can scam the system, let's do that. He's not relying on the rule books either. He's setting the standard personally. He's saying it. He's acting it. He's focused on the culture as well. And this is very important that he's focused on the culture, because the culture is going to be the real issue here, not the rule book. The morality of the organization is only the sum total of the moral actions of the people within the organization. That's culture. And Buffett could not be more right. Now, this is really interesting. It reminded me of Buffett's testimony before Congress when he rescued Salomon Brothers from their financial improprieties. And I think I can play this for you here legally because it's on C-SPAN. So let me play this and we'll talk about it in just a bit.
I thank you for the opportunity to appear before this subcommittee. I would like to start by apologizing for the acts that have brought us here. The nation has a right to expect its rules and laws to be obeyed. And at Salomon, certain of these were broken. Almost all of Salomon's 8,000 employees regret this as deeply as I do, and I apologize on their behalf as well as mine. My job is to deal with both the past and the future. The past actions of Salomon are presently causing our 8,000 employees and their families to bear a stain. Virtually all of these employees are hardworking, able, and honest. I want to find out exactly what happened in the past so that this stain is borne by the guilty few and removed from the innocent. To help do this, I promise to you, Mr. Chairman, and to the American people, Salomon's wholehearted cooperation with all authorities. These authorities have the power of subpoena, the ability to immunize witnesses, and the power to prosecute for perjury. Our internal investigation has not had these tools. We welcome their use. As to the future, the submission of this subcommittee details actions that I believe will make Salomon the leader within the financial services industry in controls and compliance procedures. But in the end, a spirit about compliance is as important or more so than words about compliance. I want the right words and I want the full range of internal controls. But I also have asked every Salomon employee to be his or her own compliance officer. After they first obey all rules, I then want employees to ask themselves whether they are willing to have any contemplated act appear the next day on the front page of their local paper to be read by their spouses, children, and friends with the reporting done by an informed and critical reporter. If they follow this test, they need not fear my other message to them. Lose money for the firm and I will be understanding. Lose a shred of reputation for the firm and I will be ruthless. I welcome your questions.
Wow. Lose money for the firm and I will be understanding, but lose a shred of reputation and I'll be ruthless. Now, Buffett is brilliant here because what he's doing is, again, he's raised that flag. We know what it is. And everybody can kind of, understand this is what the new normal is going to be at this point. So if you have been kind of pushed into schemes of doing more shady kind of things in the past, that's no longer the order of the day. Okay, so Buffett ends this letter saying, thanks for your help on this. Berkshire's reputation is in your hands, very much like this. Lose money, I'll be understanding. Lose a shred of reputation, and I'll be ruthless. Same kind of thing. He's saying this. So in the popular imagination, businessmen are greedy. I mean, you can't watch a Hallmark movie without realizing that she's with the wrong guy. She should have been with, instead of the businessman, she should have been with the woodworker who donates his time to the animal shelter. But that's not how it is. For most people who are very successful, aren't greedy, not in that sense. Maybe they're long-term greedy, but long-term greedy means that they're cherishing their reputation and that reputation has to be solid. Buffett is not one of these bad, evil Mr. Burns types. He's actually thinking about and understanding how long-term wealth is created. Now, I want you to think about Buffett's words. I want you to become the leader that you would want to follow. And I don't want you to go to jail on top of that. So I want you to think through this, understand the five most dangerous words in business. And by the way, I forgot, the quotation for contemplation today also comes from Warren Buffett. He says this, we look for three things when we hire people. We look for intelligence, we look for initiative or energy, and we look for integrity. And if they don't have the latter, the first two will kill you. Because if you're going to get someone without integrity, you want them to be lazy and dumb. Okay, that's Warren Buffett. Thank you for your time in this episode of The Leader Smith, and I'll talk to you later.